Five,
four,
three, two,
one. Hello and welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people who enjoy a wander around the buffet of technology news. With me, as always, we have Sean Preece. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Stephen Scott. Worse. That was your worst one yet.
They're always food-related, though. That's what I love. Tim Schwartz is also here. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Stephen.
And Tim, by the way, does a podcast called Life After Blindness. Now, if you haven't heard of this podcast, it's apparently because I haven't plugged it enough on this program. So Life After Blindness is Tim's podcast. Do check it out. It's available at... Where do you find it, Tim?
Conveniently enough, lifeafterblindness.com.
How amazing. Well, there you go. Well, it's a great podcast. All citizens, check it out, because there's tech news on there as well. I think he's in competition with us, Sean. Anyway, let's get on with the program. Lots to talk about this week, including some of the many bugs in iOS 11. Many voiceover and braille users are noticing, including me. I've noticed a few already. Oh, I'm going to get into that later. Also, we're going to be talking through some of your emails this week and having a look at the latest news headlines. Some really interesting stuff going on to talk about. And later, Julie Rodaway makes a welcome return to the show. Yes, Julie is back, and she'll be giving us an update on the latest braille technology and, of course, an update on Coco the guide dog, because that's the most important thing.
That's why I tuned into this show, to be honest.
Exactly. Let's be honest about it. I mean, tech is great, but dogs are just amazing, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so before we get into our conversation with Aaliyah Dudley, who's going to be joining us shortly from iAccessibility.net, she's joining us to talk about the many, many bugs, because she's an expert in this field. And, well, she has got a few bugs to talk about. I've got a few bugs as well up my posterior, because, quite frankly, I am annoyed by some of the bugs that have arrived.
Can we say that on the radio? I do apologise.
I just have, because, quite frankly, I am appalled at some of the updates. One in particular that we're going to talk about with Aaliyah, and we'll get into it with Aaliyah in a moment, but you know, there are just so many of these. I think the question is, if someone hasn't already updated, and I know a lot of blind people already have, I'm sure, but is the advice, guys, that we just shouldn't update to latest big updates like this, like iOS 11, as soon as they come out? Should we hold off?
I think so. I always give that advice out. I mean, it's the same for every 0.0 release, every major initial release of every version of iOS. There's always those annoying bugs in there. Every now and again, there's major bugs in there. iOS 8 springs to mind. But I always say, hold back if you can. Of course, I ignore that advice and just jump on. But it doesn't, you know, for me, I can live with those annoying bugs. But for some people, they just don't want to deal with it. And I don't think there's any... Oh, I must have that feature in iOS 11. That means you've got to jump on board now. Wait a couple of weeks. The next release will be out, like I say, in a couple of weeks, and a lot of the bugs will be fixed. Not all of them, but a lot of them will. So no, there's no rush.
Okay. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. This is definitely no iOS 8 update. However, there are still plenty of bugs to go around. But I think that's reasonable to say, you know what, just wait until the first 0.1 comes out or something, or at least take your time to spend a few days to read the websites, listen to shows like this, find out what those bugs are, and if you feel they're going to be game-breaking for you. If it's something that you feel you can live with, or it's an app that maybe you don't use a lot that has a bug, then maybe you're fine. But otherwise, you know, it is probably best just to hold off. But it's just each person's use case and the apps that you might use, the things you use most often, it may or may not affect you as much. So it probably is best just to wait.
Okay, well, we are going to talk a little bit more about this with Aaliyah Dudley. She's from iAccessibility.net, another podcast, actually, and a great website as well. Great resources on everything Apple. Aaliyah, great to have you here on Tech Talk.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Yeah, lovely to have you here. Really excited to talk about iOS 11 because blind and partially sighted people like us are updating in our droves. Yeah, let's just say that some people are not getting what they expected. I think that's fair to say. Maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the good things about iOS 11 and possibly some of the issues. What do you want to start with, Aaliyah? I'll leave it on you.
Yeah, pressure on the guest. I always like to start with compliments about what iOS 11 has done well. And I think One of the biggest things for me personally is some, not all, but some of the Braille changes that have occurred. It used to be in iOS 10 that Braille was this frustrating, like, overwhelming situation where if you were typing and only wanted to type one character, you'd have to hit a space and then delete the space for it to actually show up. There was a lot of very sluggish behavior with Braille, and Apple has pretty much redesigned the way that you input text in Braille in iOS 11. It's much faster as far as typing. You pretty much see results immediately. There's no more of that text showing up with full cells on either side of it, waiting for you to edit it and then hit space. If you backspace and then place a new letter in, it does not auto expand that letter into, like, for example, this morning, writing the letter G at the end of the word that I missed, it didn't expand it into the word go at the end of my word, which was very, very promising. It seems to be much speedier with moving around iOS. Other than that, some of the verbosity changes that have come for voiceover users, you can now do a bit more customization with how different things are presented in iOS, links, tables, and headings, how they talk, and how they are read to you. Oh, I forgot one thing about Braille. If you're reading in a message or something that has an emoji, no longer do you see a bunch of random dashes. It actually presents the emoji in brackets. So you actually would read the words white smiling face, for example. And that shocked and surprised and really impressed me, because now I can read and write emojis on my Braille display. I can show the keyboard, go to the emojis keyboard, and select an emoji. Now, is it the fastest? No. But it is definitely something that is a welcome change, I think, especially for those who are deafblind, who haven't had the opportunity necessarily, if they rely on a Braille display, to work with the emojis keyboard. And I think this is a very positive change.
Right, okay. So that's, I mean, it sounds a bit more contextual, doesn't it? That the way you type, if you are typing in contractual Braille, or contracted Braille, that it that it understands the difference and it can sort of contextualize it properly.
Yeah.
And in addition, you've got emojis that are now part of, you know, everyday life for everybody else. Now they can be part of the life of someone who uses Braille. I want to put it out there, though, I hate emojis with an absolute passion.
Don't we all?
Yeah, absolutely.
But now Braille users can hate them too.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I still don't quite get the whole emoji thing. I just think it's a complete pain in the neck. It's a sighted world's thing. But anyway, right. So, what about some other good things? You want to go on to the bad things yet? Or are you still on your positive run?
You know, as far as good things for voiceover, the ability to drag items and to add multiple apps to a drag session. If you're moving apps on your home screen and you see, you know, you want to move three or four to the same folder, you can do that now. I think I had five or six in one drag session once that I moved, and it was really nice. It was a very pleasant experience, and I think will only continue to improve. I think that does come at a bit of a cost of losing the ability to swipe down from the home screen. To get to the edit apps mode, you now can only double tap and hold to get in there. But once you're there, you can flick down on an app, and VoiceOver will say drag item, you double tap. And then you could go find others and flick down to add to drag session, double tap, and continue to move things. I really think that's a nice feature. The other feature that is kind of hit or miss for some folks, and AppleVis has posted an article about this, is the image descriptions presented. I personally haven't gotten them to work very well, but I know people who have. It's kind of a situation where I haven't played with it as much as I probably should have. I think it's a very exciting prospect, especially if VoiceOver can recognize text within images. This is a very good thing for those needing to extract text from JPEGs that they might be sent, or PDF images, different things like that. And along with that comes the possible text feature in VoiceOver, where if you come along an unlabeled button in an app, VoiceOver will do its best to read what it thinks the button says. And I think that is very, very cool in terms of getting an app to work that might not be the most accessible, but that you might need for something. And until we can convince a developer to make an app accessible, or while we're testing an app, this is a very, very cool feature to have.
But of course, what we don't want to happen is that we end up in a situation where people think, well, you know, don't worry if the app's not accessible because the phone will figure it out by itself.
Oh, absolutely not.
We've got to be so careful.
Always the goal is to have an accessible app out of the box, because the possible text feature is not always accurate.
I have to say, I think, you know, we have been really positive, but now it's time to be really negative.
You can't wait any longer, can
okay.
you, Stephen?
No,
can't,
I can do that.
Because I imagine people listening to this go, yeah, that's all great, but come on, Aaliyah, tell us the truth. What was it really like? What? Tell us all the problems.
I have to say that I think this is one of the buggiest beta cycles I have ever seen with VoiceOver. And I have to say that a lot of these issues are not necessarily encountered by those who aren't using VoiceOver or Zoom. One of the biggest bugs that I have seen for VoiceOver specifically is if you're using the app switcher to switch apps, sometimes, and I usually, it's about 2/3 of the time in my case, you double tap on an app and it resets the springboard completely, and you have to wait for it to come back and use Touch ID to unlock. And that is annoying me very much. As I said earlier, the edit apps option in the rotor is no longer there on the home screen. But if you go to your home screen and then flick down, you'll hear activate default no matter how many times you flick down. But if you change your rotor at all, you will not see an actions rotor. So I think it's just kind of buggy. It just sits there like it should be some sort of actions rotor, but it's not. So that could be frustrating.
It's like they're almost not sure what right. they wanted to do with it yet. But I know a lot of people didn't like the actions menu as you were flicking through the apps on the home screen. A lot of people didn't like the VoiceOver announcing actions available every time.
Right, except you can access the same things with a Braille display. You can access the old stuff with a Braille display. So it's very weird.
Oh, right. So if you've got Braille, you can get all the old right. features, right? Wow.
With VoiceOver and Zoom enabled, you cannot double tap and hold to edit apps. It will freeze up your phone or iPad. Speaking of iPads, one of the biggest bugs, and there's an article with a possible workaround posted on iaccessibility.net, but the multi-app support, where you can have an app floating above another one or an app side by side with another one, currently does not work with VoiceOver as it used to in iOS 10, where you could have two apps side by side. That is one of the bugs that makes me the most angry, because the support, the side-by-side app support, has helped me a lot as a student, where I might have a PowerPoint on the left side of my screen and my notes app on the other side of my screen, where I could easily flip back and forth between apps and look at what my instructor is presenting in class and then flip over and take notes. And I am very upset right now that it takes some serious doing to make it work. It's very advanced, and you have to be very, very specific about dragging an app to where you want it, or it just won't work.
So does that, the VoiceOver just won't read the other app, or you just can't actually get the app side by side?
There's no more side app switcher, so you can't activate a second app to place by the first. You have to double tap and hold. VoiceOver gives you no feedback. You have to drag the app up over top of the original app, and then VoiceOver will make a sound, and then you have to drag it left. It is completely inaccessible. No spoken feedback, no nothing.
And are you saying that's from the dock? So would that be from the dock itself?
It is from the dock.
So you're in an app, you've got the dock there, and you double tap and drag the app that you want to be in your side app view over to the side of the screen, and then you get this noise.
Right, you have to drag it up on top of the original app until VoiceOver makes a noise, and then drag it over to where you want it.
But you've no knowledge as to what actually is going on at that point. You're just doing that in I was just going to say blind faith, but yeah, kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. So I'm very annoyed and debated for a while putting my iPad on iOS 11, but did it simply because it was going to force me to do it at some point anyway.
But that would that be something that can be changed in the future? I mean, could you know? Are we feeding? Could you feed that back to Apple and they say right?
Certainly. And that bug has been filed with Apple. All of these bugs that I'm mentioning, I personally have filed with Apple. I know that others have filed with Apple. And I think, you know, that's one thing that you surely definitely need to do. You know, if, as you find new bugs, accessibility@apple.com is a good email address to use to report these things. And that's the only way they're going to be fixed. For Braille users, I do have to mention, this is the last major bug that I have seen that are real showstoppers for me. Braille, while it's a blessing, it's also a curse. If you type too fast, it will totally skip over words that you type. So I'm a very fast Braillist. Sometimes it will just not type something that I've written. Or if you get a notification, as long as that banner is on your screen, the Braille display or the text field will not accept new Braille input from your Braille display. It'll just sit there. And you don't know that a banner showed up because you're just sitting there jamming away on the keyboard. Next thing you know, you go to edit your text and half of what you wrote is gone. So, because you've been getting notifications. So that is very, very frustrating. The last one is messages. If you are somebody who swipes up, flicks up on a message thread to delete it, and then double taps, when you do that, VoiceOver will present a sort of fake message where it will say null and that a time sometimes, and that will not go away until you close and reopen the messages app, and you cannot reliably interact with your other messages past that point because it's not there on the screen visually. It's just there with VoiceOver. So double tapping on something, you may not double tap on what you want to. It also will not refresh with any new messages that come through at that point. You're going to have to close and reopen the app. The workaround to that bug is to go into the edit mode at the top right corner, select what you want to delete, and delete that way.
Why can't things just stay the same as they always were? Why do they have to keep changing these things? It's so frustrating. And do you know what? The thing is, the frustration that we have for it, I can understand the non-techies that are listening going, but so what? You know, these things will just, they'll be fixed and, you know, it'll all be fine. But actually, this affects you day to day because, like you say, you're using your iPad and your iPhone in professional capacity. You're not just checking your messages or going through emails. This matters.
Right.
I've got to say, I am slightly surprised when you first said about the positives that you started with Braille there. Because I've been telling people, look, before iOS 11 came out, I said, just hold back a couple of days, you know, let's see what happens. Never jump on straight away in case there's a major VoiceOver bug, which, you know, makes it really hard to use. And of course, everyone, including myself, totally ignores that. And as soon as it comes up, bang, I'm updating. Now, I thought everything was actually okay. Those bugs you mentioned, I find them more annoying than, you know, like major critical bugs. The messaging, like you say, there's a workaround and all the others. Annoying, but I can live with them. But for me, the reports I've been getting about Braille, as you said, typing and missing words and missing letters out, I've been telling people that rely on Braille for input and output not to update at all until the next release, the next update, iOS 11.1 or 0.1 in a few weeks or a month. Because I think that's a real issue. Because like you said, a lot of Braillists can type so fast. And if that's not reliable and you got to go back and check it, I think that is a major critical error.
Right. And I think the reason that I started with it was to say that Apple's on the right track. And I like what it could be. Now, what it is bad in the sense of typing, if you're typing really fast and notifications come in, etc., etc. But what it could be is great. And I like the responsiveness of it. But what it is right now with typing, yeah, if you're a Braille user, especially a really heavy Braille user with iOS 11, or if you depend on your Braille display, I would not update right now.
Which is, you know, fair comment, I think, as Sean says, for pretty much any new update. And this is a major update. I mean, there's no getting around this. Some people are, you know, saying, oh, it's a lot of nonsense and, you know, who cares and, you know, whatever, the hype and all that nonsense. But actually, it is a major update. There's some wonderful new features, and especially for Braille, actually. And you're right, they're going the right way. But it's really important we bring up these points as well, because if these things don't get fixed, then it doesn't matter how fast forward you go with Braille, you get left behind with all the problems. And as you say, for people who use Braille displays all the time, that is something they really need to use, you know, professionally or otherwise. If it's not working, there's a problem. So, no, good to bring that up. And as you say, accessibility at apple.com is the place to go. So if you find a problem, report it. Don't sit and moan about it among your friends, because that's not going to fix it.
That's what we do.
Yeah, we do that. I mean, I moan about everything, but I usually send an email to someone about it. That's my point. Yeah, so I'll say to someone, I don't like what you just said, and here's why. Or, I don't like this, here's why. And it's important we do that, because it's not to criticize Apple or to criticize any company, but actually, it's about supporting the product. And actually, if any of these companies know anything, it'll be that, you know, people are, they probably appreciate that feedback more because they know how much it means to us. And this is not just a nice little feature on a smartphone. Accessibility is our way of using it. You know, if every iPhone came out with a broken screen, they wouldn't be in business long.
Correct.
Right. And I think, you know, some comments have been made. I've seen some things, and this happens every year, where blind people say, oh, Apple's given up on accessibility, we're going to lose VoiceOver, or they're not going to keep updating VoiceOver. And I don't think that's true. Do I think this is one of the buggiest beta cycles that I've seen? Absolutely. But I really don't think Apple has given up on VoiceOver, per se.
I don't see that at all. I've heard that a few times as well, and I just don't see any evidence for that. What you said with the iPad and the side-to-side app feature, I am genuinely surprised that VoiceOver omission is there. Because with Apple, I expect them, for any new feature, such as the drag-and-drop feature, which is great. Trying to move those icons and apps around on your home screen was always so laborious before. It did get better with iOS 10, but being able to select multiple items and drag them into a folder is fantastic. And with Apple, you sort of have confidence that, okay, they will make that feature work with VoiceOver somehow. So I really don't see where the Apple are giving up on VoiceOver or not working on VoiceOver comes from.
No, I don't either. And, you know, I love to use analogies.
Here we go.
Anyone who knows me knows this. But, you know, but we don't have to build the door. We just need to find the key to unlock it. And that's the difference. And that's an important distinction because, you know, we're not asking Apple to somehow find a way for us to actually do this in the first place. We have a way to do it. They just haven't implemented it properly. But once they do, and, you know, I imagine a couple of weeks' time, we'll get the bug and, you know, it'll be amazing. Or the fix, I should say, rather than the bug.
Yes, there will be more bugs.
Yeah, there'll probably be more bugs as a result. But it's really good to see Apple continue this. From my point of view, I think it's because there are just so many features in smartphones now that it does present challenges, and with the amount of gestures and requirements on, you know, what is already just a piece of glass and all the capability that that has, I'm not saying there's any excuse for this, but, you know, things do get, you know, forgotten, and, you know, there are bugs generally for iOS as it comes out as iOS 11. So, you know, it's not just the blind getting it in the neck. You know, there are problems across the board, and it's important that we feedback on that. Now, that's what you do in your podcast. You talk about all this, and I just want to just briefly mention your podcast. iAccessibility.net is where people can find it. Tell us, here's your minute, right? Here's your minute, Aaliyah, to tell us what this podcast is all about.
iAccessibility does a weekly podcast about things relating to technology. We have done, our last 2 week shows have been about the Apple event and what we've seen after the Apple event, but we've done some other shows comparing iOS and Android, the desktop.
How dare you?
I know, right? I'm swearing on a podcast I said Android.
We'll get emails. Behave yourselves.
But
that's a whole other conversation, Aaliyah. You need to come back for another conversation on that one.
But we've compared the desktop operating systems, Windows, Mac OS, and to some extent Linux. We've talked about artificial intelligence, different topics like that, and every week is different. We generally try to stay within the half an hour to 1 hour mark, but it's a very informative podcast. We're pretty relaxed. We have a lot of fun. But iaccessibility.net is where to find us. We have some other shows. We do demo casts when we get new products or new apps, and we do unbox casts when we have when somebody gets a new toy.
It is a great podcast, and thank you for what you do, because it's important, and it's important for us to talk about it. There's no competition here, although I do think we should buy you out, because it's sounds like what we do. We don't have any money. I mean, I could probably get together a fiver. I could probably get £5 together, but that's probably it. Listen, Aaliyah, so good of you to come on and talk about it. Please come on again. We'd love to have you back to talk more about all things techie, and in particular Apple-related. Do update us as well as we go. I think we should come back to you in a couple of weeks' time, maybe in a month's time, just to see where we are with all of this. I'd be really interested to get your thoughts.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll continue to beta test, so I'll have information as Apple provides it.
And you'll get a plug-in for Tech Talk on there as well, won't you? I mean, we'll get a mention. I'm giving you a mention.
Of course.
It's only fair.
Of course.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. We don't have any money, so, we'll just, that's how you do it.
Back
scratching. Old-fashioned barter system. I'll give you two sheep, you give me a cow. Listen, great to have you on, Aaliyah. Thanks so much for being here on Tech Talk.
It's great.
Two sheep and one cow. Who needs money, guys? That's my question. Right, let's get into... What has happened to this program, seriously? What has happened?
This was professional at one point. I don't know what's going on.
I remember those days. I don't know what happened. Let's get to some news this week. And Tim has been posting about one particular story which has caught my interest, and it's about Amazon accessibility on their Fire Sticks and Fire TV.
Absolutely, Stephen. Amazon, not only having given us voice view screen reader as well as audio description in the Prime Video app this last year or so, now has added Braille support for their tablets as well as Zoom or magnification support for their Fire TVs. So they are really going all in on accessibility, especially when it comes to the blind. They really seem to be trying to compete in that arena with Apple and Google to some extent, and providing, again, not just speech support, but Braille and magnification support. I think this is really big news, quite honestly, because it really adds another level of competition in the mainstream, not just companies that make blind-related assistive technology devices, but in the mainstream. So I really thought this was an interesting story.
Amazon are really doing good things with accessibility. I don't know what the change has been, but the new voice view is working fairly well. A bit sparse on features, but still it works well for its purpose. I got to say as well, Stephen, we were talking about it earlier, and you said you thought the Zoom was the big factor in this story. I got to disagree. I think introducing Braille into the tablets is fantastic, and some people still perceive that Braille is a very niche or small factor. Maybe some small nugget of truth in that, but the fact that Amazon have done that, I think that's going to affect a lot of people. Very cheap tablet with Braille support, I think that's really good.
No, listen, I actually totally agree with that, because you're right, Braille is probably the biggest news story out of this. I guess you just look at it from your own point of view, don't you? You think, oh, well, that's great. I can use Zoom now. Although the joke is I probably couldn't see it anyway. But I like the idea of it. I mean, it didn't work, I think, very well on the Apple TV. I always found that very annoying. I couldn't really understand. And with that new remote, the new Siri remote that you get with the Apple TV, which is just awful to deal with.
Yes.
Awful thing. But at the same time, maybe with the Amazon, it will be better. But this is an update that's rolling out, Tim, across September, isn't it? So if you don't get it, don't worry. You will get the update.
Yeah, they are rolling this out slowly throughout the month of September. So, right, if you don't have it now, you will. And I'm very interested to see what people think about it as it rolls out. Of course, as always with anything else, there could be bugs, there could be issues. But I just think the fact that they're implementing it and allowing people to have this is a very big deal. So, yeah, I can't wait to see how people react to it and like it.
I was very impressed by one comment that was made, and by reading the article, I took it that this was a comment from Amazon themselves. And it was where they said that they were at day one when it came to accessibility with this. It was something they were going to improve and something they were going to work on and do better at. I have to say I'm really impressed with that honesty. Not saying for a second that, you know, they are at the forefront of this, but actually they are just at the beginnings of this. And that's true because VoiceView, as I've mentioned before, which is on the Fire Stick that I've got, is brilliant for navigating around and finding certain things like Amazon content, Netflix content. But that's kind of it. If you want BBC iPlayer or Channel 4 or Channel 5 in the UK, then you're not going to be able to get access to those apps because the apps themselves are not accessible. So it's really good to hear them saying, we're at day one.
Yeah, at this point, Apple's been doing this now for how many years? Since the 3GS with VoiceOver? So Apple's been in this space for a long time with a screen reader, with Braille support and Zoom and everything else. And so in the grand scheme of things, Amazon is new to this. This is fresh for them. And for them to have that honesty to say, you know what? We're just starting to get into this. We know it's early days for us on this, but we want to have a commitment to this long term. This is something that we want to make sure that we implement for our blind customers. I think it's fantastic to see. Again, we've had, you know, Google with TalkBack and their Android phones, and even Microsoft now making their Raider better and adding apps like Seeing AI here in the States that you guys hopefully will be getting soon. All these mainstream companies making this commitment to the blind and visually impaired community, and Amazon just being one more in there. I don't see how this is anything but good news.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've said it for a while now. Amazon are doing good things for accessibility.
And they're also bringing out a new tablet. I don't know if you've spotted this, but I got a note on my Amazon app. There's a new Fire 10 tablet coming out. Interestingly, this has been out for a while, but they haven't updated this particular one. They've been updating the Fire 8 HD. I think the 7 HD got a bit of an update as well, or the Fire 7 might just be. I don't know if that's HD or not. Because I don't care, because I can't see it very well. Yeah, I don't care if it's HD. It makes no odds to me, as long as the screen works. But the Fire 10 HD is quite interesting, although a lot of people saying still quite underpowered, considering. But, you know, you are buying a product which is, you know, considerably cheaper than, say, you know, an iPad. But I think, considering it's not an iPad, if you take it on that comparison, you're actually getting quite a lot for your money because you're getting an accessible device. I think, although the accessibility features and the general experience of Fire tablets, I would say is a bit more sluggish and not quite as, you know, up to speed as we're so used to with iPads or even iPhones, I think the experience is good. And in some respects, I think the voices are nicer. And I think it's a more relaxed experience, perhaps because the nature of it is that it is a leisure device. You know, you might consider your phone to be, whether it's a smartphone, Android or Apple, you might consider that to be your workhorse. You might not think of that, might not think the same way with an Fire tablet. What do you think?
Well, I think it's just, I don't think it matters if it's Apple, Android, iOS or Windows or Chrome, anything. I think it's a case of, for each price point, there's a certain level of performance. You know, you've got cheap Windows tablets that we've talked about before, Stephen, you know, the Atom-powered ones. Again, performance-wise, it's way down there. And then on the other end, you've got the Surface Pros, which are really good performance. So it's just a case of whatever your budget, there is a tablet for you. And with that, you've got to accept some sort of positives and negatives.
That's the key, though, isn't it? That's the key, because you've got the option. You know, if you only want, and you know, that's the thing, if you're taking, say you're going to the beach and you're having a beach holiday and you want to take some books with you and you want to listen to them. Now, some might say, well, would you take a tablet? Well, I might take a tablet, but I wouldn't take my, you know, iPad Pro with me.
That's right. Exactly.
I don't mind taking a Fire a tablet because, you know, so what if it gets lost, life goes on, you know, or if it gets covered in sand, you know, fine. It was 50 quid, you know, it's not the end of the world.
It is for me. I would cry.
Well, okay, for you, maybe. But you know, for a £900 iPad Pro to go the same way, not so much.
No, I totally agree. If I'm going somewhere, I may do that. I haven't, but it's a consideration because, again, my phone is so expensive. The iPads are so expensive. And so to have something that you can get that inexpensively, that you can load all your Kindle books on or audiobooks and have access to the internet and all the other things that the Kindle or the Amazon tablets can do for that low price point, yeah, it's not a bad idea just to have that in hand with the accessibility that's there. Like we said, is it maybe the best? Is it still slightly clunky for what it could be? Sure. But is it functional? Is it usable? Absolutely. So for that price point, yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Okay, Tim, tell us about vibrating space boots then.
All right, well, into vibrating space boots. Well, apparently there is some research being done by astronauts with these space boots for, obviously, you know, zero gravity walks. And they decided to see how they could implement in technology to have these space boots vibrate to work as maybe a directional signal for the blind. So similar to how our Apple Watches can vibrate to tell us to turn left or right and things like that. And we've heard of these types of things in the past with backpacks that have hats and other things that'll vibrate, or wristbands that vibrate. We've talked about those in the past. Well, they're looking at this. NASA is looking at this from a boots point of view to see about vibrating boots, or later on shoes. The boots are the test right now, but shoes of some kind that would vibrate to allow us to detect things in front of us, or to tell us when to turn left and right if we're using a navigation system. And as interesting and technologically cool as I find this story, I also find it quite odd and just interesting. So what do you guys think about this?
I don't know. I'm kind of lost, to be honest. Wow, vibrating space boots. I mean, yeah, I get this. I've heard of these before. Wasn't Nike, was it, the company that were going to come out with vibrating shoes? I remember that for a while.
I was going to say, I think they already exist. There's an Indian company that does something very similar with a Bluetooth vibration unit in your shoe or insoles. I remember reporting on that at some point. So these already exist. NASA's been beaten to the punch.
Well, it's the old joke about the, what was it, the NASA, who spent an absolute fortune on a pen that could write upside down. And then, you know, I think it was at the... Who was it? Was it the
Russians.
Germans? The Russians, that was it. Yeah, the Russians who used a pencil.
Right, exactly.
Always loved that story. Okay, let's change topic, because one thing we haven't really had much of a conversation about in the past couple of weeks is Braille. And, of course, Braille's been in the news. We mentioned it earlier with Amazon bringing out the Fire TV and Fire tablet support for Braille, which is fantastic. Apple have also increased in a big way, according to Braille users, like we've heard from Aaliyah earlier. Some great big updates for Braille users on that, and we know Android supports Braille, so that's fantastic. Microsoft as well. So it seems like the future is good for Braille. But what about the hardware itself that you actually use to type and get Braille into a system? Well, back with us is Julie Rodaway. Julie has been on the show before, if you haven't heard Julie. Julie was away for a couple of weeks, in fact, a couple of months almost, because she was getting a new guide dog called Coco. And Julie is back with us here again. Hi, Julie!
Hi, everybody! Lovely to be back.
Hey!
It is so nice to have you back with us here on Tech Talk. Julie, how's Coco the guide dog is the first question everybody's asking.
Well, can I thank the listeners, because I understand that you've been sent emails inquiring about me and Coco. Well, she is doing absolutely fantastic. I feel I've had her for a long, long time. She's fitted in really well. When she's working, she's very steady, very cautious, very conscientious, but off harness, she's a nutter nutter.
Like Stephen.
her name's, yeah, absolutely. Coco the Clown really suits her. But no, she's doing very well. The training was hard work, and I needed the break from Tech Talk to focus on it. But now I'm back, and you know, I'm raring to go.
Yeah, fantastic. Good to have you back. And yes, you're coming back to us in what I think is probably one of the most important roles in this program, and that is advisory. Somebody who actually can help us answer people's questions. Because, you know, we tend to try our best to answer questions. But one aspect that we don't have, and I've mentioned it before, and I'm learning at the moment, is Braille. And I'm really, really excited to start getting into it, but I'm way, way off being able to advise people when it comes to Braille, and I know that is your speciality, among other things, not just that, but you are going to be joining us over the next few weeks, and we're really excited to have you back on the team, so good to have you back, and with Coco as well, who we'll probably hear in the background at some point.
You probably will.
That's something to look forward to.
Now, you are on to talk about Braille, actually, because, I mean, it's interesting, we're talking today on the programme about you know, the problems that a lot of people have been having with Braille on iOS, iOS 11 in particular. But we're not going to talk about that in this segment because I want to talk to you about Braille generally. There are a lot of different Braille devices out there, lots of Braille displays, and you're going to tell us about a couple of them. I mean, one in particular that we've talked about in this show for what feels like years, and that is the L Braille device. It's finally out. It's actually made an appearance.
It certainly has. You know, I thought you were going to talk about the Orbit Reader then. But
oh,
no,
the
L Braille has finally made an appearance. Now, it's actually going to come in two versions. The original version, which uses the docking station with a Focus 14, that comes in two components. You can buy the docking station alone and just add a Focus 14 if you've already got one, or you can buy both with jaws added on. But they are actually going to bring out an L Braille, which isn't a docking station, but which houses a Focus 40 Braille display. And this is not a docking station. It's all in one unit. And the advantage, of course, is you've got the additional lovely Braille cells to work with. The L Braille that is currently available now has 160 gig of internal storage. It has a quad-core processor. It has Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity. Can run a plethora of your average Windows programs as well as JAWS. But because it's only got 2 gig RAM memory, you may find that you may have problems with JAWS saying not additional memory to run so many programs at once. I've had this problem previously when I've been running netbooks with such a low capacity of RAM in the past, so you may encounter that. But it looks a lovely, lovely device, and I'm delighted it's finally here. And I'm very excited about the additional L Braille with the 40-cell Braille display.
Sounds quite interesting.
It does. So for anyone that doesn't know, how would you describe this? I always think of it almost like a Braille laptop, if you want. It runs Windows 10, doesn't it?
It does. I would say, do you remember the old netbooks?
Yeah.
It's a sort of Windows Braille equivalent of that, really. It comes with Skype and all sorts of programs installed by default. It comes with Outlook Express. But yeah, I would say it's more of a netbook, sort of notebook. It's certainly not a desktop, and it's certainly not a high-spec machine by any stretch of the imagination. But if you want something that runs all your Windows programs and you want to be up to date, because specialist note takers, as beautiful as they are, they're running outdated Windows programs, Windows CE and stuff, so can't cope with many web pages these days. So this is the beauty of device like this. And I think it's a mainstay. I think it's a game changer for future Braille devices that may come on the market.
I just imagine sitting down the pub, right, and saying to my friends, you know, my friend of mine, he uses Windows 95, and everyone bursts into laughter. And then and then all of a sudden you say, yeah, but I'm using Windows CE. Everyone just stops and says, is that a thing?
Yeah, well, this is what, I mean, the HIMSS note takers are using, the Braille note Apexes are using, and the Braille note Empower. You know, that's really outdated these days. And because of that, you know, Windows Explorer, it crashes all the time. So this is really a game changer. I'm really excited about this device.
Cost?
I know the cost of the docking station is about £1,100. But obviously, if you buy a Focus 14, I think that adds the cost. I think it's another £800 on top of that. And if you buy JAWS Home, I think that's another £650 on top of that. But
wow.
If you've already got JAWS and a Focus 14, you're talking £1,100, still expensive.
You want the whole package, you're looking at about $2,500 for
a glorified netbook.
But the thing, again, we come down to, I know there's people need different things, but for the hardware you're getting, 2 gig of RAM for that price, it just makes it hard to swallow. If you're going to, it's fine to charge that extra cost, that's fine. If it's expensive, it's expensive. But at least if we're paying that sort of money, give us, you know, decent or comparatively recent hardware is what I would say to that.
Absolutely. I mean, I did omit to mention that This comes with a capacity to take an SD card of 256 gig if you want additional storage. And the internal memory is split into two components. Your software and installed programs goes on to drive C by default, and all your files, your personal files, goes on to drive D. So they sort of split the memory into two parts. But yes, I think they certainly could have given us more RAM, absolutely.
What is that about, though, Julie? Is that because the nature of the programs that people who use Braille and use these devices just need? Is that as far as it goes? Or do you think it's a case of it's the cost of Braille that's driving up the cost of the overall device?
I think the cost of a Braille display is the feature here, but I, as much as I'm excited about the device, I still think it's a lot of money to pay for essentially a docking station. Mm. You know, I think it's so expensive. I mean, you can get a decent laptop for that price, but of course, you've got the portability. This thing only weighs 2 or 3 pounds, and I've actually handled the device, and it's so small. And when the Focus 14 is sort of stationed into the dock, you wouldn't think there were two separate components because they fit together so smugly.
Well, I suppose that's what you're paying for then. If it really is that compact, it's been designed purely for the Braille display, I suppose you're paying for that. But still, all I'm thinking, which a lot of people I think will be thinking along these lines, is, well, you can pick up a decent laptop starting at £200, £300. If you've got the Braille display already, you can use that and a copy of Jules or even NVDA. I mean, you're talking a lot less money, but then again, you haven't got the same convenience, I suppose.
I think it's still an expensive price to pay for convenience, but I think that's the selling factor, the convenience of it all being in the one unit and the portability of the thing.
Right, what else? I know the Elbril's out, obviously, and that's great. I mean, it's been a long time in coming. It's almost an Orbit Reader level, but not quite, because the Orbit Reader's still not here.
The mythical Orbit Reader.
Yeah, the mythical Braille.
You know, I'm beginning to think that doesn't exist, you know?
It does. The thing is, there are some countries that are selling it, but just not here yet. I'm sure they'll get around to it soon, but, you know, sooner the better, I think.
Next year, after, God knows. Yeah, Humanware have released in America a Brailliant 14 cell Braille display. The interesting thing about the Brailliant 14 is that it comes with an app designed for iOS, and they are bringing an app out for Android eventually, but they've got this app that for iOS now. And what this allows you to do is, as soon as you connect your Brailliant 14 with your iPhone, if you've got notes or which you can take on the Braille device, it automatically synchronizes those notes, and your notes are linked to a Gmail account or an Outlook account, so you can actually email those notes to yourself automatically, and it does it automatically. That's very, very useful if you're in a meeting situation and you need to take notes on your Braille display, and then it automatically syncs with your iPhone. I've downloaded the app, which is called Brailliant Sync, and although I haven't got the Braille display in my hands just yet, I'm waiting for it to come, and as soon as it does, I'll discuss it with you at greater length. I believe the Braille on it is nice and crisp and sharp, but I think this is exciting. It also has the ability to connect with 5 Bluetooth devices as well as USB, and you can switch between each device almost on the go, if you like, by a button sequence. And I think this is a very exciting time for Braille. I really do.
It does seem like they are putting a little bit more effort into it. I don't want to sound dismissive, but, you know, with the promised upcoming releases of the cheaper Braille displays, you know, it does sound like the long-standing companies are adding more features. I mean, the 5 device support for Bluetooth sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's very ultra from Baum UK, and they're a German company, but they've got a UK office. Their Braille display, the Very Ultra, can do that right now. And what I also omitted to mention, I'm really excited about this, Freedom Scientific have brought or bringing out new versions of the Focus displays, and they're going to be able to connect to various Bluetooth devices as well. They don't at the moment. You can only connect to one device, but that's going to change. The design's going to change. And like the BrailleLink 14 that has a basic clock and note-taking abilities, as will the new Focus 14 and 40 displays as well. So that's all going to change. With the Focus 14 and the 40 that are available now, it's just a terminal. You can't do anything else with it, but that's all going to change. So excited about all this, guys.
Right, I've got a question for you, Julie. As someone who's learning and is looking at various types of equipment that I could buy later, you know, not at the moment, but at some point I'll be looking to buy a Braille display. I was really interested to learn about the HIMSS BrailleSense U2 QWERTY keyboard version. Now, this is a keyboard, a QWERTY keyboard, standard computer keyboard with a Braille display built in. What interested me about it was it just gave me this idea, and I wanted to put this to you. Does that mean that because I can buy a device like that, it means I could learn Braille without having to learn to type Braille using the 6-key keyboard?
The most effective way is for you to learn Braille is to actually type on a Braille keyboard if you can. If you on the Braille Note Apex devices, you can certainly type on a QWERTY keyboard on the home keys to write in grade 1 or grade 2 Braille. I think you can use EU Braille as well to do the same thing. But I think the most effective way is to use a Perkins or a Braille keyboard device so you actually know the letters. And then once you've familiarized yourself with how to write them on a Braille input keyboard, then absolutely transfer to a QWERTY keyboard and write Braille that way. I think it's clever that you can do that.
Don't be lazy is what Julie is saying. Don't be nice to him, Julie. You tell him there's no shortcuts.
Get a display that you actually have to write on a Braille input keyboard. I think that's the best way. And then certainly transfer over to a QWERTY keyboard method for Braille entry.
Okay. All right. Well, good advice. And I will take it on board. Be quiet, Sean. Julie, while I've still got you, just one final question. And that was our listener, Beth, who got in touch. And we said, we're not going to answer this question because we're going to give this one over to Julie because she'll know the answer to this. The question was around whether or not Beth should buy an iPhone or a Braille Note Touch. Interesting question. Because very different devices. What do you think? I mean, she's suggesting that she wants something obviously to do with Braille, but should buy a separate Braille display, or should she go down the route of going Braille Note Touch or iPhone? What do you think?
It depends what you want to do, Beth. If you want to do very comprehensive word processing documents and you want something that can cope with the internet and email and everything else, I think the Braille Note Touch is definitely the way to go. If you just want to write a text message or write an occasional email, perhaps a Braille display with an iPhone is going to be the less expensive option by any rate. But I think there's cons about that approach though as well, because if you're using an iPhone and you've connected a Braille display with Bluetooth connectivity and suddenly you lose that Bluetooth connection, you could be in the middle of taking notes and you lose that Bluetooth connection and then you've lost the use of your Braille display. With the Braille Note Touch, that's never going to happen. It's never going to let you down. Switch it on, go straight to the word processor. It's never going to let you down. So it depends really what you want. I think both ways are fantastic ways to go, but it's entirely dependent on what you want to use it for.
Is that something that happens a lot, Julie, the Bluetooth disconnect on the iPhone?
Yes, it does. And I've had it where my Braille, I'm in the middle of writing a note and my Braille display is frozen and I can't do anything with it and I've had to reset it. Yeah, that does happen occasionally. Yes, it does.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts on Braille, because it's such an important area. And I think you'll probably be really pleased for me to say this, but I think it's a growing area now. I think technology is actually bringing Braille back, and the future of Braille seems very much secure. I know the costs are something we're always going to talk about, but you know, the more people who can access Braille, the better, and then overall that'll bring the cost down. That's the theory, at least.
I think literacy is so important, especially for younger blind kids. because it's all right having a computer, and but sometimes you need to actually know how to spell a word for the spelling to sink in. I know it helped me, you know, when I was younger. And, you know, for me, the joy of sitting with a Braille book and reading by the fire. Yes, I've got a Braille display, but actually physically reading a Braille book, it still has not diminished.
Amazing. Well, great to talk to you again, Julie. Glad you're back with us.
Oh, it's lovely to be back. You take care.
Thanks, Julie.
That is almost it for us for this week. I can't believe it's been another week already, but there you go. Remember to keep in touch as well, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Just a quick point on your emails, guys. I know so many of you have been sending emails in. I have to be honest, it's a little bit difficult for me at the moment to try and read them out on air. So what we're doing is we're going to try something different next week. It's probably going to not work, and I apologise in advance, but we're going to employ... Well, we think, well, you know, it's a tech show, right? So we're going to employ some technology to read out the emails, and we're going to see how it works. And basically, if it doesn't work, it's Sean's fault, because it was his idea.
We're coming at this with the right mindset. It isn't going to work, but we're going to do it anyway. That's what I like, Stephen.
Low expectations.
We know... Yeah, yeah, exactly. Always set up for a fall, then you're never disappointed.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we're going to try this next week, because my eyes are going to pop out of my head if I try and read any more emails. What I'd also say to you is, if you want to, it would help me, and it'll certainly make your email not sound like a robot, is if you want to record your thoughts, then please do on your smartphone, on voice memos, on the iPhone. You can use an amazing MP3 recorder on the Android device, which is a great one, actually, if you want to try that out. Send in your comments to us. Just email them in, record them, and then email them to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And because you've all got so much to say, and I love it, but it's just really hard for me to try and read it. And Sean definitely can't read it, and Tim can't read it either. So, well, not to the extent of the amount of stuff we need to read.
We need Braille. That's what we need, you see?
We need Braille. Go. I know. Well, my Braille trainer got in touch with me this week. And she said, right, you, it's time to learn. So I said, excellent. So
she sounds fun.
I'm looking forward. She's, oh, yeah, it's going to be real fun. She's a real laugh. So, yeah, we're going to get together and we're going to be doing Braille. And, you know, we're going to record some of that as well for the show, because I think it's good for people to hear, you know, what it's like to learn Braille. Keep the emails coming in as well. We love getting to them. If we haven't gotten to your email yet, or you've sent in audio and it hasn't been played yet, don't worry, it will be soon. We only get an hour. Right, that is it for this week. We're out of here. Guys, thanks so much. Don't forget the podcast as well. Goodness, so much to remember. Check it out, Tech Talk episodes and Tech Talk features. You'll get that on iTunes, Audioboom, and all good and bad podcast players. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
See you next week.